Just after 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and that must mean it's time again for Money Management with Opus 111 Group's Mike Mayo. Here's Mike.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Management. My name is Mike Mayo. I'm with the Opus 111 Group, and we're here to talk with you about the markets, the economy, and to give you some insight into what's been going on in those areas. And it's been a pretty fun week this past week, so we'll have bunches to talk about. We'll talk about, the market, what the Fed did, some thoughts about the economy and inflation and all kind of fun topics like that. So we are the antidote to conventional wisdom, so if please don't expect us to be giving you the same story that you hear from the talking heads on most of the electronic media. But let us get to the important stuff. What did we do yesterday? Well, the Dow closed after having hit another 52-week high. It closed 59 points higher at 37,305. The S&P ended the week just about unchanged at 47,19. The NASDAQ higher at 14,813. The Russell 2000 down a bit, but it had hit a 52-week high during the day as well. It's at 1985. Soft white wheat ended unchanged at $6.90 a bushel. A 10-year treasury continuing to ease down to 3.91%. Crude up just a bit on the week at $71.52 a barrel. Gold at $2,033 an ounce and silver at $23.14 an ounce. This coming week, we'll get housing starts, existing home sales on Wednesday, and new home sales report on Friday. And Thursday, we'll get another revision to the third quarter GDP figures. So it'll be a slow news week. Don't expect a whole lot over the next couple weeks in terms of market activity. Most of the economic news is out, and a few of our traders will be, absenting themselves from the premises over the next so long. But in any case, you know, this past week, a week ago, last Saturday, I was talking about how the market was drifting, lack of investor conviction, just negative, boring, we don't want to do anything. And look what happened. It was a series of events, but of course the biggest one was the Fed's announcement, which immediately brought about a change in perception by certainly the traders. And when the traders changed their perceptions, investors were like, hey, what's going on down there? So it became kind of a wave, if you will. And, you know, understand that what the Fed said Wednesday, and we'll talk about that, is they haven't really done anything yet. I mean, they haven't done what they say they're going to do. This is anticipation of what the Fed will be doing based on their comments. So that's how markets work. They don't wait till it actually happens. They go in advance of. And this is also, I think, a very fine example of, you know, compared to last week's attitude to this week's attitude, why you need to stay in the game. This is why you don't pull out. This is why you stay even though things are boring and not really going the way you want and, oh my goodness, what's the point? Well, this is the point. This is how you get the big moves. And, you know, sure, pullbacks, pauses, they're still inevitable. They're not going away just because the Fed made a little announcement. This is, but this is a sea change, as they say. And let's get into just exactly what transpired. And see, the Fed gave us all a nice early Christmas present this week when they commented positively about the trend of inflation. They say that inflationary pressures are continuing to come down. And so that raised the, again, as we just talked, the interest rate cut expectations and dramatic drops right away in both current yields and the value of the dollar, as well as a coincident rise in gold and silver. Now, the S&P is up for the last 6 weeks in a row, having been 14 months since the last time now the bear market made a new low. And as I said earlier, the news caused both the Dow and NASDAQ to make 52-week highs, and just for reference, the S&P is within 2% of making one. So all things else being equal, I'd say we've got a fighting chance to get close to that as well. Now, one of the reasons the Dow set a record before the other two did was that it didn't fall nearly as far on the way down. That's because it's made up of what they call the old economy stocks, not very many, if any, of the high-tech issues. And so they were insulated by the pressure on the broader S&P and, again, the tech stocks in the NASDAQ. And the Dow still looks, as an index, relatively cheap compared to the other two. It's trading at about 17 times its projected earnings over the next 12 months. And that compares with 19 times earnings for the S&P and 26 for the NASDAQ. So which one's more overvalued? Oh, and Dr. Ed Yardini, Dr. Ed says his opinion that the S&P will go all the way to 6,000 in 2025. So if you go through the year, that'll be about a 25% jump over the next so long. So I hope the doc's spot on with that one. And see, one of the reasons I think we had this big pop, two things. One was the pent-up demand. I mean, people are waiting to do something. You know, give me some direction. Give me some inclination. Is the world ending or are things happy days here again? Which one will it be? It looks like it's the second for now anyway. And so that helped pop a lot of the buying. Also, coincident with that was all the doomers and gloomers who were convinced that the world was ending because they heard it on the TV, and that so they were what they call short. They were thinking that they would make money when issues went down, and when the market said, nah, not yet, they all had to rush in, have had to rush in, and do what they call cover their shorts. That's not a something you do with your clothes. That's not what I'm talking about. This means buying back the position to make sure you don't have any more exposure that way. And so that adds to the buying power in the marketplace. And so, you know, this past week, we saw the most stocks hitting new 52-week highs in over 2 years. And again, that's represented in the fact that the indices are hitting new 52-week highs. And this is what happens in bull markets. They said bull markets, okay? And there's what's called breadth expansion, B-R-E-A-D-T-H. It goes, more stocks are participating in what's going on. It's not just a few. And we're also seeing a continuation of what's called sector rotation. So the leading groups are kind of changing places, a little bit of musical chairs for the market, if you will. And I think it's also a good time to remind you of the fact that stock prices trend. They always have. You know, one of my favorite phrases, the trend is my friend. In other words, whichever way things are going, you know, they say, don't fight the tape. Go. It's going up. You may not think it should. You may have all kinds of reasons that, oh, that can't be right. Well, sorry. That's a good way to get run over if you keep that attitude. Now, the shares have been trending higher for 18 months. So new all-time highs in the Dow shouldn't surprise anybody. And the most new highs on the New York Stock Exchange in many years is also perfectly normal. See, through November, the large cap stocks, U.S. large cap stocks, have been up 20% year to date. So if you took out just the large cap growth stocks, or focused on them, I should say, the number is even more pronounced. That group is up nearly 36%. No other asset class this year is even remotely close. But this has also been true much longer than just this year. The 10-year results are pretty much the same. However, if you expand the period to 20 years, the average return paints a much different picture because the results between asset classes are much more competitive over a longer period. And if you dig deeper into the data, you'll find that there are many periods where the asset classes are not only competitive, but assumed market leadership positions at different points. See, there's always going to be quarters, years, cycles, days, whatever, where your diversification doesn't feel good. But over long periods of time, it's what they like to say is relentless. Don't get out of there. And with the 3 months to 1 year U.S. Treasuries still in the 5% vicinity, you can perhaps see why cash has moved up to such levels. At no time in recent memory have investors been so rewarded for taking no market risk. We're talking about the amount of cash that's still sitting on the sidelines because, again, the 3-month to 1-year treasuries are still, after the drops this past week, still in the vicinity of 5%. So a lot of folks think they're taking no market risk, and they aren't. In other words, they will get their money back, and they will get that return for the period of time that they're invested. But that's the catch. The what risk they are accepting are interest rate risk and reinvestment risk. They've already seen interest rate risk because now when they, when they go back, let's just say for sake of example that Monday is when their bond has come due and they got to reinvest. Well, they are likely not going to get the same rate of return that they had before. And that's interest rate risk. And reinvestment risk is much the same thing, where you can't get back the same amount of cash flow that you had when the interest rates dropped. That's a risk of bonds, generally speaking, regardless of their quality. But this parking of cash, I think, is in these short-term rates is coming to a close with the Fed's rate announcement. You know, those investors who continue to want to quote-unquote play it safe are going to miss out even more. And because the yields are going to continue to fall as the Fed actually does begin cutting interest rates. See, the yield on the 10-year treasury, you know, the one that is, that's the bogey. That's the one we really focus on because it helps sets rates for mortgage loans, car loans, almost everything that we do on a day-to-day basis here in the U.S. And so the yield on that 10-year has fallen below 4% for the first time since August. Because, again, the traders said, whoop, that's what the Fed said, huh? Well, we better start dropping the interest rates because the Fed isn't going to keep it up for us. And, oh, by the way, you know, gold prices were on track for a pretty big jump this week, driven by two things. A weaker dollar and lower treasury yield, because that's the only things that will make it go higher. And because, see, if you go back to the high point for gold came actually in the mid-70s. When you adjusted for inflation, the price was set then at $3,333 an ounce, which is just about $1,000 an ounce below where it is now. So the only way you can make money on gold is to trade it. You're not going to hold it long term because you haven't even made money going back to the 70s. So please spare me the long-term benefit of gold. And, oh, by the way, it doesn't pay dividends or interest. Now, here's one for you. I came across this. I gotta bring it up. A group of academics have set out to test this investing advice that says a diversified portfolio of stocks and bonds is the best way to save for the future. They found, across a sample of 36 countries over 130 years, I'm assuming that they went backwards. They weren't; these guys aren't that old. Was that a mix of half U.S. and half international stocks actually beat the blended portfolios, both in money made and their preservation of capital? Now, the paper, I know you want to race out and get it. It's called Beyond the Status Quo: A Critical Assessment of Life Cycle Investment Advice. And I'm quoting from Scott Cederberg. He's from the University of Arizona, who co-authored this thing with two other folks. Scott says, as long as the stock investors are able to stick it out, always a key, they end up being better off with a very high probability than someone who's trying to smooth out those short-term movements by diversifying into bonds. They used a computer run doing 1 million simulations for American households. And in doing so, they found that while the max loss for an all-stock portfolio was deeper, okay, that's understandable, it wasn't bad enough to derail performance over the long haul. So unlike stocks, whose performance is random and erratic, we know that, the base attraction of a fixed income is the steady and predictable returns to give some people some sense of control over their investment. Now, Scott says it's a trade-off, and that trade-off can be worth it. A lot of investors have the idea that X percent of my portfolio is going to give me Y percent return. And you can't always do that with stocks, but you can to a great extent because they pay dividends. And dividends typically over time rise a whole lot quicker than do fixed income coupons. So that is the name of that particular song. Now, if folks would just take the time to go look and see what the market's actually been doing instead of getting all caught up in arbitrary things like noisy headlines like jobs, Fed, housing, yield curves, and whatever else, I think we probably would eliminate a lot of the challenges here. And this is, excuse me, a great time to remind you that, again, stock prices trend because the trend is their friend, and they always have. They've been trending higher for 18 months, and that's where we're going. Oh, here's the American Association of Individual Investors comes out with surveys, and they said their percentage of bearish investors is just about 19% in the latest week, down 27.4% from last week, and the historical average of 31%. Like I said, a difference in perceptions. And finally, from Adam Crisafulli, of Vital Knowledge, Adam says, I think this makes sense. And I'm quoting, stocks are generally extending their gains as investors embrace the new paradigm whereby monetary policy globally, in other words, all the big banks, all the big central banks, finally undergo a pivot following one of the most synchronized and aggressive tightening campaigns in history. He goes on to say, shares may be near-term overbought, but the evolution in policy will be a powerful tailwind for quarters to come. That's right, Adam, and don't you forget it. Okay, so let's talk about the Fed specifically. And this is in a statement from their meeting on Wednesday. And I'm quoting, recent indicators suggest the growth of economic activity has slowed from its strongest pace in the third quarter. Job gains have moderated since earlier in the year, but remain strong. And the unemployment rate has remained low. Inflation has eased over the past year, but remains elevated. So that eased is what set everybody off the other day. See, meaning the Fed officials, they're trying to balance two things. One is that if they move too slowly to ease policy and the economy crumbles under the higher interest rates. The other is that they ease too fast and inflation settles in above 3%, which is, of course, above the goal of 2% that they've been espousing for so long. Now, the central bank did hold their overnight borrowing rate steady in the 5.25 to 5.5 range and forecast 3 rate cuts for next year. And again, that was the catalyst that set everything off. Not much change in their meeting statement, however. The statement did acknowledge, that, again, that inflation has eased over the past year. And they did formally lower its inflation forecast for next year, seeing 2.4% down from 2.6%. Mr. Powell went on to say the committee is proceeding carefully. The Fed still wants to see ongoing progress toward their 2% target. We still have a ways to go, and no one is declaring victory over inflation, unquote. Now, there's a good chance that the Fed will actually cut rates sometime in the spring. Could even come as early as March, but May or June's probably a safer bet. Now, futures traders think there's a 92% chance that the Feds will cut rates by June. Well, that's exactly what it is. It's a bet. So I wouldn't put that one in the bank just yet. And although Mr. Powell said that our economy has slowed substantially in recent months, the Fed still expects our GDP to grow 1.4% next year. Not a lot, but it's still growth. Now, the Fed didn't change short-term interest rates, but it did make major changes to its projections for those short-term interest rates. And that's a big thing in itself. And while the median forecast from those policymakers as recently as September was to do one cut of 25 basis points, 0.25% in 2024, now the median projection is for 75 basis points in 3 different increments. So that could be quite interesting because lower rates are definitely a boon, a positive thing for stock prices and for a lot of other things. You know, it's been 40 years since we had a real inflation problem in the U.S. So, you know, it's important for you to remember that that can really distort the data. And as Mr. Powell said it at his press conference on Wednesday, and again, I'm quoting, this inflation is not the classic demand overload, the pot boiling over kind of inflation that we think about. It was a combination of very strong demand, without question, and unusual supply side restrictions, that's polite, both on the goods side but also on the labor side, because we had a labor force participation shock. Yeah, that puts it badly. Basically, the two things that caused the inflation were the bug and the lockdown. That's it. And all what came from there. So it isn't, and again, that's why it's kind of tough to really look at it academically, because it didn't come from academically based inflation, if you will. You know, and the good news is, and this, the Wall Street Journal had this to offer, the good news is that there's evidence that cooler inflation readings could be coming in the months ahead. And I think that's probably almost a foregone conclusion, but that's my opinion. So prices for a lot of the goods, big goods, have been falling lately. That's a reflection of this unwinding of the supply chain problems caused by the lockdowns. You know, prices for a number of items, including home appliances, furniture, sporting equipment, toys, they're all down from a year ago. Hasbro, as a matter of fact, let off a whole lot of folks because their toy sales are down a bunch. And the semiconductor shortages that helped reduce the supply of new cars and trucks has also subsided. And vehicle inventories, while still pretty low, are rising. And dealers are offering more incentives. So that's going to help drive some activity through the dealer side of things. Now, the consumer price index, that's inflation at our level, rose 3.1% in November. That's a year over year, which was pretty much as had forecasted. And it was down slightly from the 3.2 in October. So, but here, please keep this in the back of your mind with regard to inflation. Prices are still going up, but the rate of increase is slowing down a lot. And where you're not, see, where most of us are not seeing the benefits of lower inflation are in a lot of the big ticket items. The stuff like food and gasoline, those things are all over the board a lot of the times. And so they affect us more directly because they're in our face all the time. But big picture, the economy is indeed benefiting from this slow down in demand and stuff. So here's another consideration, like an asterisk, if you will. The overall prices on the consumer price index were held down by energy prices. They were down a bunch in November due to lower prices for gas. Now, you and I both know that those gas prices can go all over the place depending upon what those people in the Mideast are doing with and to each other. So understand that that is a big driver of your near-term inflation direction. But as it looks right now, so far so good. And so this is why you want to consider what's called the core rate, because that excludes the food and energy, which are all over the place. Last month, the core rate on the consumer price index increased by 0.3. Over the last year, it was up by 4%, the core CPI. So that was as expected. And so now, though, the year-over-year core rate is down for 8 months in a row. That's the kind of trend we want. Now, producer price inflation, that's at the manufacturing level, took a pause in November. A lot of categories didn't really change from October. So I don't know what to make of that, but that's okay. Now, mortgage rates, this is a biggie. This is directly, and again, this is related to the 10-year. They fell below 7% for the first time since August. Now, this Freddie Mac threw that out there. And they're suggesting that the market could thaw next year. When I got this information, which I think was Wednesday or Thursday, the average for a 30-year fixed loan was 6.95%. That's down from 7.79 in late October. Now, that's a free fall for mortgage rates, all things else being equal. This could help the housing market because, obviously, if rates come down, it makes it a little easier to finance a property. And if the demand, again, as home builders are doing a great job in putting together a lot of new properties to take up some of the slack for the demand. That can help knock the price appreciation down somewhat too. So could be good for that side of the economy. Now, rent prices, that's what the Labor Department uses, not just to measure what renters are paying, but also to do housing cost measures. It was up 0.5% in October, up 6.9% from a year ago. But see, the thing is, it's a lagging indicator. Even though these costs, the shelter costs, are about a third of the CPI, they're driven primarily by housing prices from 18 months earlier. So they're not really a source of inflation. They're the result of inflation. And so you got to be, why 18? Who knows? I mean, obviously, I was not, they didn't talk to me about it. I don't know why. But continuously falling inflation, that's hardly a given. You know, as we know, the numbers can bounce around month to month, and while rents and other items seem destined to be still dropping and cooling, there's other items that can certainly add to inflationary pressures. And although inflation is generally trending lower, as the Fed has said, it's still not where they want it to be. And with interest rates now above inflation, and that's across what they call the yield curve, in other words, all the bond yields, and the measure of money supply down 4.5% from July of 22, money is tight enough to bring inflation down. But overall, the shades does seem to be set for inflation to come lower next year than it is now. And I'll tell you what, that would make the Fed's job one whole lot easier. Now, please make note, we are not in a recession. However, the economy is clearly slowing down. Now, a lot of economists think the economy shall have grown in real annualized terms by 1 to 1.5% in this quarter, the fourth quarter. The Fed's trying to engineer their world-famous soft landing for the economy, and yet, which is for inflation to dissipate, to go away, or to be reduced, but for the economy to avoid that recession. In other words, a soft landing. Can it be done? It's a toughie, for sure, but it's going to be a lot to do with people's attitudes and other outside pressures that aren't directly related to that topic. Now, as far as the overall economy is concerned, you may recall that just a year ago, many economists and talking heads were warning us that we were barreling toward a recession. We were about to be Thelma and Louise right off the edge into the abyss. Just ask them, film at 11, that whole thing, right? And at the time, for some of us, it was just a bit challenging to make sense of these bearish predictions, because if you consider these persistent and massive economic tailwinds, which are there, which signal future growth, and of course, many other reasons for optimism. And optimism is the only way you're going to make money, folks. That's the truth of it. You know, some of these unusually massive forces that have been juicing our growth over the past few years have now started to ease. And again, you're seeing that as effect is that's helping, but one of the reasons why the economy is slowing down. And again, the data do seem to confirm that economic conditions have gone from very hot to toasty, if you will, to something that's a bit more normal. You know, a year ago, our friends, friendly economists, of course, were saying, we're going to be going into a recession. Look out. As I said earlier, Thelma and Louise are going to take us over the edge. Well, so much for Thelma and Louise. They're not taking us anywhere. We're not in a recession, certainly not yet. And don't let you be thinking that you are. At the time, though, as I said, started saying in the last segment, at the time, though, you know, it's hard to make sense of these bearish outlooks when you see what else is going on in the economy. Again, inflation had already started to cool, and despite the persistent economic growth, so that gives you some positive feeling that perhaps we would see a soft landing because inflation could cool to manageable levels without the economy going upside down at the same time. Now, we know that year to date, the economy has created jobs every month. Consumer spending has climbed to new record highs, and GDP growth has remained positive and even accelerated into the third quarter. That's a good thing. So here's three tailwinds, okay? The unprecedented trillions of dollars worth of excess savings accumulated by folks, the high number of job openings, still quite high, and the record high levels of what's called core capex or orders. And I'll explain that in just a second. Now, all three of these are notable because they're what's called leading economic indicators. Excess savings represent extra money that has yet to be spent. The high job openings represent hiring that has yet to happen, which then also can mean additional incremental consumer spending power that has yet to occur. And the core capex issues, which are capital good businesses that have yet to put to place, means there's still work to be done by those manufacturers, and there's more capacity coming for the businesses that ordered this stuff. So in recent months, these forces have trended toward more normal levels. Now, just because excess savings are down doesn't mean people are out of money. Oh, people most definitely have money. People are sitting on a whole bunch of wealth. According to the St. Louis Fed, and I just looked this up this morning, in money market funds and equivalents here in the U.S. as of, I believe it was December 7th, there are still 6.1 trillion with a T in money markets and equivalents. That's just a bit much, don't you think? You know, it's just that all this extra cash sitting on top of all the money and wealth is still available to be spent at some point. To say it's all coming into the market would be a little silly, I think is a good enough word, but it's going to find a home somewhere. And that's good to the benefit of the entire economy. Now, the JOLTS report, Job Openings and Labor Turnover Survey, show that job openings have come down significantly. Because, like in October, the most recent month we have numbers, 8.7 million job openings. Well, in March of 22, that number was 12 million. Okay, so we filled 4 million, but there's still lots and lots of job openings. And just because they're down a bit, the job openings, doesn't mean the labor market is toast. You know, layoff activity remains low. Hiring activity still remains high. And claims for unemployment insurance remain also relatively low. It's just that employers aren't quite as desperate to fill the open positions as they have been previously. Now, the orders for non-defense capital goods, including excluding aircraft, that is the core capex or business investment stuff, well, that fell slightly in October. Now, the figure does continue to trend near record levels, so growth is stalling a bit. And just because these orders have gone sideways doesn't mean business activity is going sideways. A lot of this equipment hasn't even been delivered yet, and once in place, the businesses are likely to be more productive than they once were by using this new equipment. So keep in mind that these cooling numbers are the intended effect of what the Fed's been doing to help bring down overall inflation. And I'm back to the R word, just because, I am not in any way, shape, or form suggesting we are in one or even close to one, but recessions happen. That's the facts. And recessions and the market volatility that kind of comes with economic downturns Yeah, those are hurdles on the long-run path to building wealth in risk assets. Like that study showed about just putting everything in stock. If you can stick through it, you'll do okay. I think whatever your portfolio allocation, the key is sticking through it, no matter what. Now, at the same time, as we've seen, not all recessions are the same. It's certainly possible that the next one is short and shallow. And keep in mind that a recession now would begin as the economy is in an unusually and historically strong position, meaning that a recession may knock the economy from being very strong to just being strong. I think we could probably live with that little bit of a drop. But to reiterate, a recession in the near term, no sure thing. No, N-O, no sure thing. But as the data continues to come in, we have to be vigilant and watch for signs that the story is changing. You know, don't be so committed to this is the way it always is that you get overcome by the circumstances. So what about now? According to the Breitbart Business Report, the American consumer is rushing into the end of this year in high spirits, in part because they like how next year's presidential election is shaping up. The University of Michigan's Index of Consumer Sentiment was up 13% in December. That's like crazy, I mean, to have that big of a move. You know, this was a sharp and sudden reversal after 4 months of ongoing and declining sentiment. So not only did the downturn end, the December pop-up reversed almost all of the decline in the second half of this year, bringing the index back to where it was in August. I'd say that's a pretty good attitude adjustment. Thank you, Fed. Where were we? And the European Central Bank and the Bank of England held their interest rates steady along with the Fed as they're moving now globally from monetary tightening to talk of rate cuts. Other good things that happened in the economy, 199,000 jobs added in November. That's the 35th consecutive month of jobs growth. And the unemployment rate nationally has now been below 4 for 22 straight months. That's the longest streak in 54 years. If you don't want to do the math, that's the late 60s. So that's more than a couple weeks. Now, we showed, consumers showed strength in November because of retail sales rose stronger than the decline they had anticipated and better than what the Dow had anticipated them rising. Primarily, the purchases were in restaurant and bars, not surprising at this time of year, and down in gas stations, with the prices higher and people not moving around, that'll do it. So wholesale used car prices are now at their lowest level since March of 21, down 20%. Now that should lead to lower retail prices already on the decline. So we have a lot of these things that should continue to help keep inflation under control. So thank you very much for listening. We'll be back next Saturday, I think. Let's see, Christmas? No, we won't. We won't be here for the Saturday before Christmas, but we will be here for year end. So Merry Christmas, everybody. Happy Hanukkah. I know I missed it, but still, a great holiday season for everyone, and we appreciate you listening to us. Thank you very much. This is Money Management. I'm Mike Mayo with the Opus 111 Group.
Join us again next Saturday morning at this same time for the financial insight, opinion, and perspective of Money Management with Opus 111's Mike Mayo. Have a question or comment? Email us at info@opus111group.com or visit our website, opus111group.com. Sections of this radio show contain forward-looking statements that are not guarantees of future performance. This information is from sources we believe to be reliable. However, we cannot guarantee that it is accurate or complete. These comments are for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice, nor as a recommendation to buy or sell any security or investment product mentioned in this show. Investing involves risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Individual circumstances do vary. Please consult an investment professional prior to making any investment decisions.